When you work with information technology, you deal with a lot of acronyms. You deal with a lot of alphabet soup, and we use terms like ISDN and POTS and T1 and OC12s and things like that. We'll briefly talk about each of these today, but we'll focus in on a couple of them since we do only have 30 minutes. But these are all different technologies that can be used for transporting information, whether that's telemedicine type information or actually any type of information, and we'll talk about that. POTS stands for plain old telephone service, and it's the analog telephone line that the phone company can run out to your house or can run into your office or run into your business. ISDN will spend, and tomorrow I think you'll see, is Mike Caputo still in here? I think some of the workstations tomorrow are actually going to deal with POTS technology. How do you deliver video and information out, say, for home care applications? And so there are actually video products today that will deliver very slow frame rates, very low resolution bit over a regular analog line or a modem that would operate at 33 kilobits, can deliver multimedia information into a home or to a business location. ISDN is Integrated Services Digital Network. It's an acronym in the industry, which means that you can get a lot more channel capacity or a lot more bandwidth. And network design, when you boil it right down, if you're an Irish kid from South Boston like I am, you just net it out to it's bandwidth for bucks. It's how much channel capacity can I get for how much money? And how do I get reliable channel capacity? How do I get manageable channel capacity? And how do I get the best deal I can possibly get for it? And we're pretty fortunate in this day and age because there's a lot of competition in this industry. And those competitive forces continue to keep driving the prices down. And I'll give you an example of that in a little while. And we'll actually touch on all of these different technologies right down through wireless. These are the types of things that we're interested in when we build a network. We're interested in the type of information that we're going to transmit. Is it a video? Is it a still image? Is it audio data? And we'll talk a little bit about each of those. We're also interested in what kind of time constraint are we under. If we have no time constraints, we can take massive amounts of information and over relatively slow links, over relatively inexpensive transmission facilities, we can move that information. But we tend to be looking at some type of store and forward application when we do that. If, on the other hand, we're trying to move real-time video, then the demands of the network become very intense and it can get very expensive to do that. We're also interested clearly in the functionality. What can we get this transmission media to do for us? What types of things can we do with it? Does it give us the ability to connect to any location on the planet we'd like to connect to, or does it really only connect points A and B together? Obviously, as I mentioned before, we're interested in cost. If we weren't interested in cost, it wouldn't be worth talking about because we'd just buy as much as we wanted and move on down the road. Reliability, in my job is to build networks and then maintain and support networks. In the group of people that I work with, that's what our mission in life is. And if it's not manageable, if it's not reliable, we shouldn't be putting it into service and we shouldn't be putting it out there as something that people can use for telemedicine or even for use out to a small for a small business application. And finally, but very, very important, is what is the easy use characteristics? How user-friendly is this technology when we put it in place? And you'll see a lot of products tomorrow which provide video conferencing capability. Look closely at how easy it is to place a call, and in particular, look at how easy it is to place a call between dissimilar units. How easy is it for you as a relatively new user to this technology to walk up to a device by manufacturer A and place a call to manufacturer B? Is it intuitive? Can you place that call? And does it come up most of the time? A few years ago in this industry, with this technology, particularly video conferencing technology, the call success rate for the first call between two disparate systems was something under 50%. About a year ago, it was all the way up to about 70%. Now contrast that with when's the last time you picked up a telephone that actually had a wire connected into the wall and it didn't work? How often has that happened in your lifetime? Right? And in fact, the next speaker, Dave Agins, works for a company where they very much focus on trying to get video conferencing technology to be as simple as a telephone is to use and as reliable. Very important. So the type of information we want to move is an important consideration for us if we're designing a network or if we're providing a service to somebody. And generally, I view it as falling into these areas. We have video image, which has a characteristic of being very graphically intense and if we're doing it in real time, needing a lot of channel capacity, and I'll demonstrate what kind of channel capacity this needs. We also have still images. And to me, whether it's a graphics file, whether it's a picture, whether it's something that somebody scanned in on the scanner, or it's a fax, it's still a still image. Or it's a photograph of mom or the kids, it's a still image. And it has different requirements of the network sometimes, frequently, than video imaging does. We also have audio information, we have text information, and we also have binary files. If we put these all together, then what we typically have is multimedia, and we start to talk in terms of multimedia, not only in terms of the workstation and being able to deliver all these types of information formats to a workstation, but also to be able to move them across the network and have the network respond to the varying or different needs of these different types of information. Now, what I'm going to do today in terms of is focus, I use the paradigm of video because it tends to be one of the more demanding, but if we look at what we need to do for video network design, then we're also looking at least the same techniques that we could apply to audio, still images, text, and binary file transfers. So if we look at video when we're standing in the United States, the standard for video today is what we call NTSC. NTSC is a National Television Standard Composite Signal or code, and it's the quality of video that you see when you turn on the nightly news or the kids turn on Sesame Street and you're watching it on your television set. It's also the quality of video that you see coming out of the camcorder that you might buy at Sears Roebuck or Service Merchandise or wherever you buy those types of things. Okay. It's broadcast quality video. We in the United States, and probably anybody that grows up in any relatively high-tech civilization, is used to seeing video in real time. We're not used to images that go move fast and then like freeze and lock up like that. We're used to our standard, our personal standard, our professional standard is real-time video. High quality like we would see on the nightly news and operating in real time, not a bunch of stilted images freezing across. And that's going to put, that can place significant demands on the network and will. Now, if we don't need to do it in real time, we can do what I mentioned before, which is store and forward. If I can take a video file or a video signal and store it, particularly if I can digitize it, then what I could do is I could move it over a much lower capacity channel. I could even do it over a modem link if I have enough time to do it. But in order to move a 30-minute clip, it might take me 18 or 20 hours, depending upon how much bandwidth, how much capacity I had on that link. When we're looking at real-time video, broadcast quality video, if we were to digitize that and not attempt to compress it, then we would need a channel capacity of 92 megabits per second, or somewhere about that. Now, for those of you that don't deal in bits and bytes all the time, that's the channel capacity equivalent to somewhere over 1,400 telephone calls. And here's your first pop quiz. If you wanted to move that kind of information and you want to use the telephone network to do it, and you could get a rate of 10 cents a minute, what would it cost you per minute for that telephone call? Really, for 1,400 telephone calls. It would cost you $140 a minute or about $8,000 an hour. If we were looking at these kind of economics, we wouldn't be having a program on how to build telemedicine and talking about video at all, if that was the only way we could do it. There's another option, and that's to use lossless compression. Now, what we do in compression is we take and remove redundant information from our information store or from our signal, and we only transmit changes in our signal. And there are two broad forms of compression. One is called lossy, and the other one's called lossless. Lossless means that every bit of information that started out in the original signal can be reconstructed at the other end. In lossless, it means that you've thrown away some information. You've paid the price of losing some information content because you recognize that some of that information content really might not be important to you, and therefore you'll take the benefit of placing less demands on your network, less demands in terms of channel capacity, and therefore less demands in terms of cost. Broadcast quality transmission today in a lossless compression mode can be done at about 22 megabits per second. And if you're willing to take lossy compression, then you can get it down to even a single telephone call at relatively slow data rates, like 28.8 kilobits per second. How many people here surf the web and do it from home or the office? How about from home? And most people probably don't have ISDN lines. How many have ISDN out to their house? Me and Ricky are the only ones that have ISDN out to their house. But we're building a network, So you know what you've got some feel for when you bring an image up on the screen, what happens when you're trying to do that over a modem of 28.8 kilobits per second. Right? So if you're willing to assume some loss of original information content in your signal, then you can use lossless compression, and the range is 28.8 kilobits per second up to whatever you can afford. Our standard today at Fletcher Allen is 384 kilobits per second, which is the equivalent of 6 telephone calls. In order to achieve that on a telephone network, we place 6 telephone calls and then we bond all the channels together to achieve that. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. That means we place 6 telephone calls, we have the complexity and the equipment of being able to place 6 telephone calls and connect that information together, and of course when we get our telephone bill at the end of the month, we have the privilege of paying for 6 telephone calls to the same location. But to achieve the quality that we're looking for today, for most of our telemedicine applications, we find that 384 kilobits or 6 telephone calls meets our needs. It's also true that technology keeps improving. And some of the newer codecs on the market, particularly a couple of the codecs that we have down in our video lab, are showing about a 30 or 35% improvement in at least perceived quality that we see. And so that might take us down to 256 kilobits, which means 4 telephone calls, which means one-third the number of calls, or two-thirds the number of calls, which means two-thirds the amount of cost on a usage basis in on our telephone bill. So these are the components that we have in a video system. We have some type of video source, and generally it's a camera, although it could be a VCR. It could be a specialized camera like an otoscope, and you'll see a bunch of peripherals tomorrow. We have cameras that people stick in bodily orifices and look at interesting things. I'm the technology side of it, so you know. But specialized cameras to do that, but any type of video source, industry standard video source, we tend to deal with NTSC. There's a higher-end version of that called S-Video. Most of the equipment that we buy will handle either of those. Right? That tends to be our bias. The next thing that major electronic component we encounter is a codec. A codec is a coder decoder, and in this case I'm talking about the coder function within the codec. And what that does is it takes this very intense or dense video image signal and it digitizes it. And for the codecs that we use for ISDN, in fact, the codecs we would use for most transmission, whether it be ISDN or otherwise, that codec is also going to do a fair amount of compression of the signal. It's going to work very diligently to remove redundant information. And an example of redundant information is if you, in your mind, run an image, big square image around me like a TV screen, as I move, the only thing that's changing, the only information that's changing is the motions that I'm making. The background's not changing at all, except for the little bit where I shift back and forth. So when you're sending a video signal and you're trying to compress it, the only thing you need to do is send the changes in the image that I present in a two-dimensional area and the changes that I force on the background behind me. But the stuff way above my head and the stuff way out to the left and to the right, you don't have to send that information. And that's part of what compression is all about, is saying, well, let's not send the image of the blank screen over here, because that hasn't changed at all. Okay? So this codec is going to also do some compression for us. We're then going to have some communications equipment. And in some cases, the communications function is built right onto the codec, and you'll see that in a lot of ISDN equipment, particularly ISDN equipment, when you're talking at data rates up to 128 kilobits per second. If you need to go with greater data rates than that, then you're going to need some additional communications equipment, which adds additional complexity and cost to the installation, but now gives you the benefit of being able to put multiple telephone calls together. Right? An example of that is something we call an inverse multiplexer. It can take a signal like a 384 kilobit per second signal, generate 6 telephone calls with it, take the compressed video signal, basically break it into 6 parts, send it out over 6 telephone calls, and now we get to the other end of the channel where we're going to look, we've got the transmission media, which is what I just talked about. Then we'll encounter another piece of, did I have comm equipment? I left comm equipment out, sorry. There should be another one right here. So we have comm equipment there, we should have another one here. All right, in that case where I have an IMUX function, it's going to take those signals, it's going to recombine them into a single stream, it's then going to feed them back into our codec, and then it's going to feed it to whatever display or recording device, be it a TV monitor, a computer monitor, a VCR, whatever we have for either capturing or viewing the video information. So those are the major system components that we're dealing with. Now, I listed a lot of transmission options or different types of services that we could use. The one that we use prevalently today is ISDN. And these are the characteristics of ISDN. It has transmission capacity in increments of 64,000 bits per second, which is, there are some products on the market today that, maybe not for a lot of medical applications, but certainly for some business applications, there were some codecs out there. Again, I mean, one of them is we've got sitting in our lab that does a really nice job at 64 kilobits per second. So for some applications, you only need to make a single call on the ISDN line, a single 64 kilobit call, and you can have adequate video transmission. You put six of those together and the quality starts to look pretty good. And you'll see a lot of examples of that over the next few days. There are two flavors of ISDN in the United States. There's two flavors in Europe. There's slight differences, but we'll talk about the U.S. standard. One is called BRI, a basic rate interface. It's a digital line. It can support two bearer channels. The bearer channel is the 64 kilobit channel that we're talking about, and it can support two of those. So on a single ISDN BRI line, you have the ability to make two telephone calls at 64 kilobits. The other version sometimes is referred to as T1, but it's really called in the industry PRI, a primary rate interface, and that can support either 23 or 24 simultaneous 64 kilobit calls. You should always plan on 23. What happens is on the first PRI you put in, there's another spot it's not good to stand in. On the first PRI line, they take one of these 64 kilobit channels and they send all the signaling and control information for everything that happens on the other 23 channels. When you go to your second and subsequent PRI line, you can actually use all 24 channels that are available. There are some reliability implications when you do that, so you want to take a look at that before you actually decide to do it that way. But 23 or 24 channels per PRI. Okay. If you need to make a call greater than 64 kilobits per second, then we're going to do that inverse multiplexing thing I talked about, or some version thereof. You're going to place multiple calls. The communications equipment is essentially going to blend all of those calls together and present a single high-speed interface at whatever that aggregate speed is to your codec or to the device that you're connecting to it. And generally, there's two pricing components with ISDN. There's a fixed monthly cost for the line, and then there's a usage component. And the usage component is generally based on a per-minute rate, or it might be a per-second rate. And when you look at it, people always quote you the per-minute rate. You can get this for like 8 cents a minute or 13 cents a minute. It's like those ads where you get like, this is only going to cost you pennies per day. Go back to the 1,400 calls at 10 cents a minute at $140 a minute. This stuff adds up when you start doing a lot of this. You really want to be looking at the economics. You want to be looking at alternatives and where your crossover points are. One of the interesting things about standards in our industry is, though, although we can standardize the technology and the signals and everything else, you can never standardize what people charge you for. It depends on where you are. Okay. The price on ISDN lines I hear ranges anywhere from about $30 a month up to $90 a month. And in fact, the numbers for Vermont are a little bit low at $88 because depending upon where we need to get to, sometimes they can get up to $125. There is quite a discrepancy for the fixed monthly charge for the line between New York and Vermont. And they're both the same company. It's both the same telephone company. Part of the difference there, though, is that the usage costs in Vermont have a different characteristic than they do in New York. In Vermont, for local calling of ISDN calls, within your local calling area, there's a cap on that of about $30 a month. Once you hit $30 a month, you can stay online all day long, all month long, and it's not going to cost you any more for local usage. In New York, that's not the case. Local usage, my understanding in New York is that it doesn't cap, it just keeps running. Now, the fact that it's a usage-based service is something you want to be careful of, because we don't just use ISDN for video conferencing and telemedicine, we also use it for data connectivity in our network out to remote sites. And we've had the pleasant experience of putting what we call in the wide area networking world routers out at a location doing some traffic estimates, figuring that we're probably only going to be online a couple hours a month based on traffic, and the router made the call but forgot to hang up. And when you get a $38,000 telephone bill for one telephone line at the end of the month, just to talk to somebody 30 miles away, your boss generally wants to sit down and have a conversation with you about that. Fortunately, we have a good relationship with the phone company, and we were able to, you know, work that issue through. But it's something you definitely want to look at. Usage for local calls, so as I'm saying, ranges from 0 to 5 cents a minute. If you're calling long distance, then the range tends to be around 5 cents a minute, and you're going to be placing a lot of volume to get a 5 cent a minute rate. Up to, depends on where you're calling and where you're calling from, over $5 a minute. The question was, is that the per minute rate I'm giving you, is that per line or it's actually per call? And so for 384 kilobits per second, you would multiply whatever the number was times 6. Now, I don't want to scare you with the $5 a minute rate, but I've done some work down in South America. And interesting, you can call down there for $1.15 a minute, but when you call back, if you're calling from the other end, some of the rates hit $4 and $5 a minute. So definitely something you want to keep your eye on. Hardware costs. If we're talking desktop video conferencing systems, it is a mainstay in terms of how we build one of these things. Then these are some of the hardware costs. Codecs typically are running, or can run anywhere from $1,000 up to over $25,000, right, for special applications. But typical in the industry today that the target market price tends to be about $1,500. And for $1,500, you get an ISDN codec. It can handle a single ISDN line, which means it can handle 128 kilobit. It will usually come with a little camera with it. And it'll have some software with it for running the system, and it will typically run in any 486 or above base PC. COM equipment, ranges can go anywhere from $200 up to over $35,000. In fact, I'm looking at a unit today for PRIs that'll cost me about $70,000. But for the type of board that you would put in a desktop video conferencing system or a telemedicine workstation to achieve 384 kilobits per second, you're looking at about $1,500 typically is what you'd be paying today for that, $1,500 to $1,800. Okay. And support, this stuff is not as easy to use as a telephone set. I don't know, what does a quality stethoscope cost? Can somebody tell me that? How much? $170. And a stethoscope is $170 for a quality stethoscope, and it's an amazing device. It can deal with analog information, and it can deal with digital information. I mean, the heart's beating so many times a minute, that's digital information. That's a very specific number, right? And you can deal with all kinds. And it's very reliable, and it's very intuitive to use, I guess, once you've used it a couple of times. Although in medical school, maybe they spent a couple of months studying the thing, I don't know. And I would think for most medical practitioners that use a stethoscope, that's a pretty quick device to use. Same thing with a telephone set. If you've grown up in the United States, by the time you're probably 5 or 6 years old, you're able to place telephone calls. Okay? This stuff's a little more complicated than that. Also, we just talked about putting a lot of fancy equipment in there. Do not underestimate the level of support required to support these things. Right? Healthcare providers are very busy people. I'm sure you all know that. I certainly experienced that in our environment. And if it's something that takes a computer science degree to operate or to figure out to get to run, docs, nurses, people on the run don't have the time for that. So it's really going to be set up, and you've either got to have the human support or you've got to put the energy into building the interfaces so it's really point and click. Okay. It turns out that the pros and cons for ISDN are both the same. It's a very flexible service. It's a telephone company switch service, so it can call any ISDN line, can call any other ISDN line. Okay. It also, ISDN is not just used for video conferencing. It can be used for voice. As I mentioned before, it can be used for data connectivity. And if you're creative enough and you've got the right technical talent, either on staff or that you bring them in short-term to design it for you, you can use the same group or bank of ISDN lines to do telemedicine, video conferencing, data communications, a wide area networking connectivity, and also use it for voice communications. And we do that at Fletcher Allen today. Some of our ISDN PRIs are used for all three of those applications. ISDN has inherent quality of service functionality. And when I talk about quality of service, I talk about it from a data networking standpoint, which means that once I set a call up on ISDN, excuse me, unless somebody cuts down the telephone line in the middle of my call, I have the same amount of channel capacity dedicated to me for the duration of the call. It never varies. Okay? It's not some statistical average that I get. I get a fixed 64 kilobits of transmission capacity. If I make six calls, I get a fixed 384 kilobits of transmission capacity. Right? That's not true with some of the networking technologies, such as Ethernet, Token Ring, where it's volume sensitive and it's a very statistical sort of switching arrangement, so that even though I might have a pipe that's 10 megabits per second, the demand might be such that the delay is going to vary all over the place. And delay and variable delay does not work well for video images, does not work well for audio signals. Works fine for things like file transfers. If I just need to send an image and when you get it and that's okay. Because it's a usage-based service, it has inherent accounting functionality. It gives you a detailed, minute by minute, here's who was called, here's the time of day they were called, here's the duration of the call. That's good, the fact that it gives you that information. Has anybody ever looked at a telephone bill for an organization that has over a couple of hundred telephone lines? It's not an easy thing to decipher, so there's pros and cons. It's a carrier-based service. And there's good aspects to that and there's bad aspects to that. The good aspects to it are that it's a very sophisticated network, telecommunication network we have in the United States. It's very well maintained. It's very, very reliable. The downside, if there is one, and the downside might be that with newer services such as ISDN, they don't have as much familiarity with it. If they're putting dial tone in your house, they do thousands of those a day. It happens like this. When you're dealing with ISDN, allow plenty of planning time because you're going to have a shakedown period where you get the stuff up and running. Okay. And I talked about the ease of use before. You'll hear terms like T1, T3, OC1, OC3, OC12, OC48, all that alphabet soup stuff. These things were all just transmission pipes that operated certain data rates. So when somebody says T1 to you or T3, they're just talking about a transmission pipe and how big is it. And a T1 is 24 channels, a T3 is 672 channels, and an optical carrier is how fast do you want it to go. We put between the main campuses for Fletcher Allen today, we're building OC12 pipes, which is 622 megabits. And we can take that to OC48, which is four times that, so we're up in the gigabit range with it if we need that kind of capacity. Okay. Switching is a different matter. The question when you get the pipe, that's one thing. Now it's who you're connecting together. If you're connecting two locations together, point to point, then you're going to be doing the switching. You're going to be taking the signals and routing them and figuring out where they go, or the equipment that you put in to do that will. You can also go with carrier-based services such as frame relays, such as ATM, such as ISDN, PRI, where the inherent switching capability that the carrier provides in their network is available to you. Typical costs, these are Vermont costs. On a point-to-point, where we would do the switching, and we put a fair amount of these in, a T1, if we're just doing it around town, between two locations around town, we can get those for about $500 a month. If I needed to get a T3 around town, that's about $3,000 a month. You really need to check with your local carrier to see what they, and don't just check with them, check with everybody who's offering the service in town, and see how the prices shift around as you invite more and more people into the game. It's an interesting thing to watch. Wireless, to me, is just another transmission medium. Okay. And the type of wireless it is, it really just determines how much capacity I might have and what it's going to cost me to do it. We can certainly send video images over cellular. I think the current data rate available on cellular data transmission is like 19.2 kilobit. It's going to be very slow, freeze frame. Has anybody ever seen the little round ball camera you put on top of you? You buy them for like $129 and you can do video over the internet and look at the grandchildren. Well, if you're as old as I am, you have grandchildren. But you can do that kind of quality video over 19.2. I don't have to belabor all the sub-bullets in here, but it's not a cheap thing to do, but sometimes if it meets a need, then you do it. Microwave, you can have a lot more capacity with microwave, but you have capital costs and ongoing maintenance costs when you do that, and you need to get licensing of the frequencies you use. Satellite, cost of satellite makes cellular look like a bargain. The nice part about satellite is any place you can put up a dish, as long as you're not inside a cave someplace, you can get the signal there. We were looking at some stuff over to the other side of the planet, recently, it was going to be about $12,000 a month to put up temporary satellite links. But if you need to get there, you need the images, it can be done. Also, there's wireless in the private phone systems today. We haven't used it for any of our applications, but we will be experimenting with that. Also, some of the private phone systems today, whether your local PBX system have ISDN capability, which you can add into it so you can do ISDN switching. Right. The thing I'm really focusing on right now is local area network-based wireless, because in that environment, it gives me a lot of flexibility to do a lot of things. At Fletcher, here's where we'd like to see the video move to and the multimedia imaging move to, is onto the backbone data networks that we're building today. Right. We really, my very last bullet here is avoid that third network. We've already got an extensive data network in place. We've already got an extensive telephone network in place. We don't want to put up another extensive network that we have to manage and maintain using slightly different technologies when a lot of these technologies really look the same. Okay. There's always a place for ISDN type. There's always a place for H320 video. But really, the more we can move a lot of this stuff onto a network that we're already maintaining, the more we'll lower costs, and the more the support costs can be contained. If you do put your telemedicine signals on your local area network and your wide area network, then you've got to look at things like gateways. How do I get between this world and the switch world where people are out using the public telephone network? And there are products out there today to do that for you. Was there a question? Yeah, the question was, is he going to make his commitment to get off in time, which he didn't do. Final note, though. Okay. I'm a technologist. I like to build networks. I like to fix things that are broken. Okay. But this is really all about healthcare. It's about patients. It's about providers. It's about stuff they can use. And in the information technology industry, we talk about applications a lot. Is there an application for this technology that's either going to improve the quality of healthcare or help us lower the cost of providing healthcare? And that's really what this is about. Okay. Raise your hand, or you walk into a public room and say, we're going to put up a telemedicine program, you won't believe the people that will be calling you on the telephone. A lot of them will say that their system's the greatest, and a lot of them are, and a lot of them are very good at it. Okay. But in the final analysis, we, the people helping run the environment that we're providing healthcare in, are the true integrators. The vendors help us do that a lot. They bring significant resources to the table. But we're the only ones that can help our end users either take advantage of this technology or not. So if there's a benefit there, people will use it. If there's not, it's not going to happen. Okay. And last but not least, I have to say this because Paula Fortin, is Paula here? Oh, Paula had to go over and support the program for tomorrow over there, and Dan Blondin. Don't underestimate the level of support you need to provide this. Okay? Helping people learn how to use the technology, getting the technology up and running the first time, working with the phone company, working with the vendors, finding the right vendor mix of products, and then replicating it through your organization. Okay? Any questions? The question was about the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which takes and creates funding, which really is used to reduce some telephone rates and expenses for certain user populations. One of them is healthcare, another one is education, and another one is rural areas. Okay. The observation was also made that it's a very complex, it comes down from our federal hierarchy, so it's not very, it'd be difficult for it to not be complex. Okay. And how do you take advantage of that? And the answer is that the best place thing to do is probably be out on the web, really understanding what the implications are, where you can take advantage of it, because it will not meet all your needs. It's not going to let you put up a telemedicine program for 10% of what other people have put it up for. It'll allow you to get some breaks on some communications cost, but when it comes right down to it, there's still going to be some things it's not going to fund, such as equipment and things like that. I would tend to partner with vendors. I tend to lean towards the vendors and partner with the vendors that are researching those things, staying conversant in those things, and are looking to help me out, because I can only have so many eyes and ears out there looking at these types of things. Right? There's no linear specific answer to that. The comment was made that you can, on the web, you can fill out an application, fill in the application what the characteristics are of what you're trying to do. And then vendors, carriers will come and quote to you based on their understanding of what they can do with these different rates. Okay. That it's hopeful, right? but I don't plan on things like that, right? I incorporate that into the planning, but I plan on, here's what I can do today with what I know, and anything I get that reduces rates is a bonus. Anything I do that can help feed and spur competition in the marketplace from strong vendors who are committed to good service helps us, not only in terms of reduced costs, but also in terms of the resources they bring to the table to help us with our planning and design and building efforts. The question is, how easy can you access ISDN lines in this part of the United States, and particularly in rural communities? We have, of the 2,000 providers within Vermont and, say, the six counties within upstate New York, there's about 2,200 docs in that area. There's about 700 locations where healthcare is practiced. That's everything from a single person rural practice up to a healthcare, major healthcare facility. In Vermont, I can get to the phone company and their competitor can get me to something like 87% of those locations with ISDN. They've gone in and qualified them, and the percentage is slightly lower. I think in New York, the six counties in New York, they can get to about 83%. So pretty good penetration even up here in all rural Vermont. The question is, comment on ATM versus ISDN, and whether the telcos are aggressive to introduce ATM into rural areas. The local exchange carrier, the predominant local exchange carrier in Vermont, excuse me, is Bell Atlantic. It used to be NYNEX in this area. And they're not planning to introduce ATM until late 99. One of their major competitors within Vermont has ATM available today. ATM, asynchronous transfer mode, is a type of switching service available from some carriers, and you can implement yourself, which can give you different qualities of service based on the type of information you're trying to move. And in the volumes I look at it, things like ATM are a lot more attractive than doing a bunch of individual ISDN lines. The question is, do we run into problems with independent telephone companies? Independent telephone companies are the small telephone companies you find that might handle one or two towns, and there's I think there's something like 12 or 15 of them in Vermont, and they represent 15% of the access lines in Vermont. Although they only represent about, interestingly enough, about 5 or 6% of the provider locations, which implies that even though a doc or a clinician might live in an independent telco area, their office tends to be in a Bell Atlantic area for some reason. They're a little slower to come around than, in some cases, they're a little slower to come around than the local exchange carrier is, I think because they don't have the financial resources and they need to wait and see. It's a large capital investment to introduce ISDN into a telephone company switch. A couple of years ago, the minimum number was about $350,000. And for a telephone company to invest $350,000 to give you and I each one ISDN line and then charge us $40 a month for it, the payback is significant. We have to live a long time. The comment is that even if the local exchange carrier, say Bell Atlantic, is willing to bring the service into the independent area, the independent area is independent telco is frequently not willing to do that. I think there's a couple of things there. Sometimes the technology to make that happen is not as trivial as it seems. But the other piece, this is my perception, this is not the, and I'm not a spokesman for the independent telephone companies, and you'll know that in a second. It's my perception that they're trying to figure out whether what the market is for ISDN, and if they let the local exchange carrier, who has a lot of power, get in there and take all the early offerings, then they're going to shut themselves out of the market. That's when you start looking at things like wireless. You don't buy it, but you have brochures on your desk when the telephone company people come in and see you.